And with that, we are going to continue down informational items. We'll move to item 14, Fate Dam Habitat Addition and Assessment. Welcome, Dylan.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. My name is Dylan Gravenoff, fisheries biologist at the Fort Pierre office there on the Missouri River. While Chris is pulling up the PowerPoint, I was asked to give a little bit of an update on a research aquatic habitat research project that myself and some of the other staff in Region 2 are working on. Just showcase a good example of where some of our habitat stamp dollars are being spent on the aquatic side of things, so that yourself, our staff, and anglers can see where some of those funds are being utilized. This is still an ongoing project, so I'll just go over a little bit of kind of the how and why this project came to be, give a little bit of an update on what we've done so far, and then just a little bit of a glimpse of some of the data we've collected so far and what we hope to do with the rest of the data once we have it.
There you go.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and just hop right into it then. All right, so just a little bit of the why this project came to be. Obviously, we've talked a lot about habitat and access over the years. When we talk about aquatic habitat, it can be a little bit of a black box. It's a little bit of difficult to assess and evaluate aquatic habitat. Obviously, over time, our water bodies can age, habitat can change, and it can degrade over time. And often it can be pretty difficult to view or even document what kind of habitat is out in our waters and what kind of condition it's in. Comparing it to like the terrestrial side, not saying it's easy on the terrestrial side, but it's much simpler to go out, look at a landscape, kind of see what's out there, evaluate what's out there. You can make changes, see how those changes are applying and easily see how wildlife are using it. When we're talking about the aquatic side of things, you put habitat into the water, whatever that may be, and then it's kind of a little bit of a black box to know if that habitat's doing what you want it to. So there's a lot of different habitat improvements we can do, and I won't touch on them all today. Some of your kind of higher level projects are like a full lake restoration, which can be very expensive. You kind of have middle line stuff where you're looking at like watershed level improvements to change habitat. One of the more simple and cheaper options to improve or increase habitat is by supplementing habitat structures. Some of the options that we have done and other areas have done, you can look at natural structures that might be going into a lake when water levels are low and maybe putting out some gravel spawning areas, spawning beds for fish. Perhaps putting out some rock piles. This is actually a picture from Lake Elvin that our Southeast management crew has been working on doing while that lake's under restoration. And another common tool that we often use is utilizing Christmas trees or cedar trees to sink those into lakes as a form of habitat for fish to use. Along with that, there is also artificial structures that we can use. Some states are using actually homemade structures. These are called Georgia cubes, where they're pretty cheap option to use because you can make them yourself. There's also commercially available options such as Pond King is one company, and then Mossback. Mossback is a company with artificial structures that South Dakota has utilized for quite a while. So that's kind of what we'll focus on here. And then kind of just the why for evaluating fish habitat. I kind of touched on it a little bit already, but we have put these habitat structures in all over the state for many, many years, and we just kind of believe that it's a good thing, and we think it is, but we don't really know like how the fish are actually using these structures. Once they go in the water, it's really hard to document, are the fish even using them? Are they there? We don't really have a great idea. If you look at the picture on the bottom, that's actually the Farm Island Causeway. They're at Farm Island State Park by Pier, really popular shore fishing site. All those buoys there was actually, we went in and installed habitat structures there a handful of years ago with the thought that we could actually, if you put structures near a shore fishing site, we can actually attract fish to that area where people are fishing and provide better catch rates. But we don't really know, are we actually able to manipulate where fish go and where they reside by putting in these structures? And obviously the ultimate goal of doing any of these habitat improvements is to eventually improve angler catch rates and make our anglers more successful in the field. And also along with that, we really wanted the results of this project to hopefully be a guideline tool for aquatic habitat access biologists of, should we continue to use these supplemental habitat structures? If we do, what should we use? Should we use the more expensive commercial made mossback structures? Should we be using cedar trees? We might be able to give them some guidelines on using structures based on the species that are in the water that they're interested in, maybe where the fish go during a certain season. Should we put them where fish are in the winter or the spring, vice versa, answer some of those questions. So this is Fate Dam. If you're unfamiliar, it's a small prairie impoundment just north of Presho, South Dakota, just west of Chamberlain. So in order to kind of do this, to actually evaluate where the fish go, we're using a technology called acoustic telemetry. If you're unfamiliar, it's pretty straightforward. We have these passive receivers. It's basically a receiver that we can place in the lake and they continuously listen for tagged fish 24/7. So we can go in and plop some of those receivers in the lake. And then we take our fish here, we surgically implant a transmitter in those fish. That transmitter has a unique ID code that as a fish swims around, it pings. So then those receivers that are out there can listen for those tagged fish and record every time that it hears that fish in the system. We've been using this technology quite a bit with Game and Fish, but we're actually kind of utilizing a new avenue of it with this study. We're actually doing like fine scale positioning. So in the past, when a fish swam by a receiver, you kind of knew that that fish was somewhere in the area, but you didn't really know exactly where it was. With this new technology, when one of those fish pings, as long as it's heard on at least three of those receivers all at the same time, it can essentially kind of triangulate exactly where that fish is. And it pretty much tells us down to a few meter precision, like that fish is exactly right here. Not that it's in this area, it is right here. So that'll be really useful for this project. So this is just a map here. All the red dots just kind of show where we place those receivers in the lake. So nice coverage all across Fate Dam so that as those fish move up and down throughout the lake, they should be in close proximity to multiple of those receivers at a given time so that we can get those accurate positions. So now that we had those receivers in the water to actually listen for the tagged fish, the next step was actually get some tags out, transmitters out in some fish. So we started this in May of 2024 last year. We went down to Fate Dam, we collected some fish, and then myself and some others, we basically used like electrofishing gloves that temporarily stunned the fish, and I was able to put a little incision in there, insert a tag, and then stitch those fish back up and release them. And we ended up tagging 70 individuals, 27 crappies, 23 bluegills, and 20 bass. And those tags would last for a full year. So we tracked those fish from May of 2024 through April of this spring. And basically what we wanted to do with this, we were tracking these fish before we made any habitat improvements. And the reason for that is we kind of had to have a baseline idea of what these fish do prior to any improvements, right? Otherwise, if we waited and didn't know what these fish do under normal conditions, we wouldn't have anything to compare it to. So flipping forward to this a couple months ago, earlier this spring, is we actually went ahead with the habitat installations that we were going to do on Fate Dam. Like I mentioned, we used those artificial commercially produced mossback structures on the top picture there. And then we used cut cedar trees on the bottom. Big shout out to the Chamberlain Terrestrial Habitat crew there. They were actually this past winter had some planned tree thinnings on some of our game production areas. So they are already going out and they're cutting some trees. So we didn't have to go cut any additional trees. They cut everything down, hauled it over there for us. But I think we ended up, and I'll get to it, we ended up deploying, I think, 182 of these artificial structures and 182 trees into Fate Dam. So there was a lot of habitat went into that system. When we install this habitat in the Fate Dam, we kind of followed, we didn't just kind of willy-nilly throw these structures wherever. We put them in complexes or fish cities. This picture here is just a diagram provided by Mossback, kind of giving a rough idea of how to position these individual structures to make an overall complex. So we kind of loosely followed that, but basically we would take 26 Mossback structures, kind of place them together in a small area to make a complex or city, and then we'd do the same with the cedar trees. So this map here, it's kind of hard to see without zooming all the way in, but in each one of those little blue clusters, that would be a Mossback habitat complex. So there's 26 individual pins in each of those clusters, signifying a exact habitat location. And then the yellow marks, that's our cedar tree complexes. So we spaced these across the lake, but we wanted to make sure to pair those mossbacks side by side with the cedar trees so that we would be able to evaluate, one, if the fish used any of them, and if they did use those structures, did they prefer the mossbacks for the cedar trees so that we could use that to inform going forward. So once those structures went in the water, I think about March of this spring, then we were ready to go ahead and do a second year of tagging to actually put some more tags out there and track these fish to see if they actually use these habitat areas. So in May of 2025, we tagged another 70 fish, 30 bluegills, 25 bass, or 25 crappie, excuse me, and 15 bass. And actually just last week, I went back down there to Fate Dam and we tagged 10 more fish. So there's actually 9 more bass and another bluegill on top of that. But again, the plan with those tags, they will last a year. So we'll be able to follow that cohort of fish from the spring of 2025 through the spring of 2026. And then next spring in 2026, we'll tag another group of fish and track them for a full year through the spring of 27 to have 2 years of replicate data before we start analyzing results. So just looking at some preliminary results, like I said, this data is really just coming in. Well, not as we talk, but we're still gathering data, but this is a little bit of data from last year just to kind of give you a glimpse of what we're going to be looking at. So this graph here, this is all the locations just from crappies, just from the month of September. So it was a little overwhelming when we got this back and it looked at this and it looked like there's just fish everywhere. Not really informative to look at that and really say what's going on. But when you dig into it a little bit more, you can consolidate that map down into like a heat map, where then that cleans it up a little bit. And then you can really start to see there is distinct areas throughout that lake where those fish are preferring to use. And again, this was before any habitat went in. But the ultimate goal will be, these are just hypothetical locations, but if these red boxes, if say these were the footprints of our habitat structures that we put in this year, we'd be able to overlay those with the 2025 and the 2026 data and be able to look at how much time do those fish actually use within those areas versus outside those areas to have a pretty concrete estimate on how much use is actually going on in those habitat complexes. Another just very similar example, this is just largemouth bass from the month of July last year. Kind of same thing. Kind of hard to glean anything just from that graph, although you can see some differences, like just looking at it, like appears the bass are a lot more near shore adjacent. They're using some more of that natural habitat. But then the same thing, if you can take that graph and turn it into a heat map and you kind of see some of those hotspot areas where the fish were preferring to be anyway. And then the same thing with that, we'll be able to eventually in the future overlay our footprints of our habitat complexes and see how much they're using those areas. One of the other objectives that we'll be able to use with this is we're getting a lot of those individual points of exactly where those fish are moving. And each one of those locations has a timestamp. So we'll actually be able to look at individual movements too. I really wanted to put like an animation on here so you could see this fish move kind of in real time a little bit, but that was a little difficult. So I just put a still picture here. But this is just one crappie over a 12-hour period. And if you use your imagination a little bit there, you can see a pretty clear, distinct movement of where that, how that fish moved throughout the system. So we'll be able to look at each one of those points, see how, measure how far apart they are, and then how long it took that fish to make that movement. And then we can come up with some movement rates. This will be important because there's some research out there with some of these habitat studies that by actually improving habitat, you can get fish to move less and move more slowly, which can actually improve growth and condition. So we might be able to evaluate that also. And then just one more example, kind of along with that, is this is just looking at one bluegill over a 16-hour time period. Kind of the same thing. You got to use your imagination a little bit, but you can see either it's moving kind of in a clockwise fashion or counterclockwise, but it kind of stops and hangs out in one spot for a little bit, makes a movement, stops and hangs out, and whatnot. So we'll be able to look at some of those movement rates. And that's all I had for today. Like I said, this is still ongoing. Hopefully over the next year or two, I'll be able to come back and give you some more results as we have it. Well, be happy answering questions.
Very good. Questions, Commissioner Beast.
So that bluegill that was going in the circles, is he raised in the RAS system?
That's good. That'd be the best commission joke ever.
Very good. Additional questions, comments from the commission. Commissioner White.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have you noticed then about how far the fish are moving from the time that you have staged them to when you've done the research and where they're at? Is there some type of measurement that is consistent with the number of different species that you've planted the device in?
Are you saying like overall how far they've moved,
right,
like from when we tagged them to our last day?
Right.
I haven't looked at that yet. We have the data that we'd be able to look at that to see if, kind of just off the cuff, what we have seen is like that our crappies are just moving way more than any other species, which kind of makes sense. They're kind of more of a pelagic nomadic species, so they kind of roam a little bit, versus your bass and bluegill are more structure oriented. So we're anticipating that those two species will use the habitat more, and those crappies might still roam a little bit, but that's definitely something that we'll be looking into.
Thank you.
Interesting.
Additional questions, comments? Dylan, so part of the, I guess, objective or the research will also be, correct me if I'm wrong, as you look at where they're going towards that man-made habitat versus the natural, then we know what to invest our dollars in when we're putting habitat down there. Is that also part of the reasoning behind some of this?
Yeah, absolutely. So the primary question will be first, do they use any of the habitat that we put out? That'll kind of be first objective. And if they do, then we'll be able to look at, okay, we know they use the habitat. Are they preferring one type of structure over the other type of structure? If they are preferring one type of structure, then our guideline would to our habitat access biologist would probably be to use those types of structures. We'll also be able to, we can kind of manipulate on a time scale how we look at the data, so we can look at spring use of the habitat versus winter use of the habitat, and use that to be able to inform where in the lake should we be putting structures, if we should be putting them at all.
Yeah, interesting. Very good. See no other questions or comments. Fascinating project. Thank you for sharing that with us. And we